This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, welcome back, Crossover NBA Podcast. Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. And Howard, we are truly national this week. I am coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, home of the suddenly interesting Charlotte Hornets. You are in Northern California, Warriors country. So we've got four corners, but two corners at least of the country covered in this podcast. What's up, man?
What's going on? It's the only corners that matter. I don't even know where the other corners are, but we've got two covered. We got two of the most interesting teams covered. The Warriors incredibly hot, the Hornets resurgent. We're good.
Yeah, we got it covered. We're set. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the surging teams in the league. Last week, Howard, we went kind of negative. This week, we're going to go a little more positive and talk about the Washington Wizards, who are one of the best stories in all of basketball. The Cleveland Cavaliers. How long has it been since a non-LeBron Cleveland Cavaliers team has been interesting or good? We're going to talk about them as well. But some of the top newsmakers still back in the news this week. Ben Simmons, 76ers guard, estranged guard, let's call him, in Philadelphia. He was in the news this past week again when his agent, Rich Paul, made some public comments to The Athletic about the situation involving Ben Simmons and Philadelphia. The Sixers, of course, resumed fining Simmons last week for missing games after Simmons refused to meet with the Sixers' medical professionals about some of the issues he said is happening. Rich Paul came out and told The Athletic, quote, "I truly believe the fines, the targeting, the negative publicity shined on the issue. That's very unnecessary and has furthered the mental health issues for Ben. Either you help Ben or come out and say he's lying. Which one is it?" Now, Simmons, since then, has started to meet with the medical professionals in Philadelphia. He is still not back in the lineup. He is still not a full-time member of practice. So to say that Ben Simmons' future is still very murky would be an understatement. So I'll ask you this, Howard. What do you make of the latest developments involving Ben Simmons?
Honestly, I'm just tired of it all. I mean, I think the whole world is. Sixer fans, I'm sure, are NBA fans in general. I think everybody just wants this thing to be over. Nobody gives a shit about this posturing anymore. Really. Like, I'm sure there are some pocket fans who are devoted Ben Simmons fans, and certainly people in his own camp who, listen, they're playing out what they feel that they have to do to get this resolved and to keep the pressure on the Sixers to make a deal. The Sixers have dug in. They have made it clear they're not making a deal until there is a good deal to be made that benefits the Sixers. And in the meantime, we are still where we've always been. Ben Simmons is under contract. Ben Simmons has contractual obligations to play for the Sixers. He and his camp have, whether you want to say, manufactured an out to get him paid while he's not playing, or whether it's legitimate. However people want to look at it, cynically or at face value, nothing has changed. And continuing to play it out publicly, Rich Paul, I'll give him credit. That was a very clever presentation he made to The Athletic, where he basically put the Sixers on the spot with the exact question that we are all asking ourselves about the Simmons situation, which is, What do you believe, 76ers? Is it legitimate? Because if it's legitimate, then you should just work with us because he's got a mental health issue of some sort. If not, if you're saying he's lying, well, then come out and say it. Like that, I could almost see Rich Paul smiling as he said that. He is putting the vice to the Sixers and saying, state it publicly. Go ahead. You think we're lying? You think Ben's lying? Go ahead, then say it. Because I think he's figuring the same thing that we all are. I think most people look at this with skepticism. And it's not to say, we've covered this before, Chris, this is not to dismiss outright, and it's not to say for sure, because we don't know, that this is just contrived. But the bottom line is, Ben Simmons has wanted out for months. Ben Simmons made a trade demand. Ben Simmons didn't show up to camp, not citing any mental concerns at all, then cited it back, then eventually got to the mental thing. It really has played out in a way that draws and generates understandable, justifiable skepticism about whether this is really a mental health issue of any sort. Mentally ready to play, they've called it, not really mental health. But there's legitimate skepticism about whether that's really the case or whether this is just them finding new and different ways to have him not play for the Sixers and keep the pressure on the 76ers to trade him. The truth will be known when they do trade him, because I'm sure all of his issues will be disappeared overnight. And
well, that's the big thing, Howard. That's the big thing that sticks with me, is if Ben Simmons gets what he wants and is traded anywhere from Sacramento to Brooklyn, is he back in the lineup in a matter of days? Are these mental health issues, mental issues, whatever you want to call it, strictly connected to his time in Philadelphia? If that's the case, that's not a good look, because there's a price to pay for that. Because if Ben Simmons is using mental health as a tactic, as a lever to pull to get what he wants out of this situation in Philadelphia, there's a trickle-down effect, because the next guy that might actually have more legitimate mental health issues could pay the price for this, where there will be skepticism from a fan base, from an organization, maybe even from the league, that this isn't just something the player is doing to get what he wants contractually. Look, we can't foreshadow, or foresee rather, what happens a month from now or 2 months from now, but I'm certainly with you. I believe that if Simmons gets traded tomorrow, he's in the lineup before the weekend with the team that he's with. And that would suggest that these mental health issues are nothing more than contrived. Personally, Howard, Ben Simmons has got to speak. He's got to speak at some point. I know the questions coming to him are going to be tough, but Simmons, to his credit over the years, has not shied away from tough questioning. Like, he has been visible after every game that he has struggled in. He has been available after tough losses. I'll give him a lot of credit for that. He stands there and he takes the punches when they're coming at him. He's got to do that again. I mean, whether it's a gaggle with reporters or whether it's a one-on-one interview with ESPN, with Sports Illustrated, with anybody, I think he needs to sit down and talk about what's really going on. Because right now, all we're getting is what his agent is saying, what sourced people around him are saying. I think Ben Simmons needs to sit down and do an interview and explain exactly what his position is.
Well, I mean, listen, it'd be nice to hear from him, Chris. It's been a long time, and we have no firsthand accounting from him, as you've noted. And it's fallen to Rich Paul on the record, Rich Paul possibly whispering off the record, various others whispering off the record to various people, usually for a purpose, usually to further an agenda and to get their message out, which is fine. That's the way it goes. But yeah, Ben Simmons at his best is a top 15, top 20 player in the NBA, and could be again when he starts playing, wherever that may be. And I think all of this has raised legitimate concerns. I mean, listen, his refusal to shoot in fourth quarters was raising legitimate concerns about his, you know, overall makeup as a player. And then the way he has handled this entire trade demand and all of the, you know, manipulations of the last couple months of not showing up and then showing up and then refusing to go and not playing hard in a practice and in drills, like all of this crap, like, you have put yourself in a really bad light. So yes, at some point, coming forward and explaining yourself would be nice. I don't know that we're ever going to get that. I think probably the next time we hear from Ben Simmons will be his opening press conference with a banner behind him of some other team. And whenever that day comes, it will be interesting, because there is a backlog, Chris, a massive backlog of questions and curiosities about the way we got here. And, you know, in the meantime, none of this other stuff is doing any good. Like, this should just sit quietly in the background, you know. And I get it. I understand what Ben Simmons' camp, what Rich Paul and those guys are trying to do. And I understand the job is to be an advocate, a fierce advocate. And that varies from agent to agent, right? They all got their own styles. We know that Rich Paul is particularly aggressive. That's fine. In this case, it's not doing anybody any good for him to be out front or Daryl Morey to be out. Everybody should just shut up, stay behind the scenes, keep pressuring each other if you want. Put the screws to each other behind closed doors. But this thing continuing to play out in any public way with either anonymous leaks or targeted interviews that are just designed to put more pressure on the other side are pointless. You already know where they stand. Rich Paul already knows where the Sixers stand. Daryl Morey's not going to make a deal until he finds the deal he feels is justified and palatable and benefits the Sixers. And it's probably not happening until at least December 15th when more players are eligible to be traded. It may not be happening for another month anyway because we're still waiting for the sorting out that happens early in a season where teams will finally decide to cash out on certain things and deconstruct their roster or make a big play for Ben Simmons as their new franchise star, whatever it may be. That's just going to take time. Nothing is going to change that. And Rich Paul should know that by now. And nothing that the Sixers can do, I don't think, is probably going to change Ben Simmons' refusal to practice and play. So, all of this should just be playing out behind closed doors at this point. Far be it from me as a reporter to say that anybody should stop talking to us. But this is a case where the whole world's fucking sick of this, frankly.
Yeah. One week goes into the next. New stories keep coming out, and we are nowhere closer to a resolution on Ben Simmons. All right, from one clutch sports client to another, John Wall, the Washington Wizards, now the Houston Rockets guard. He has not played a game for the Rockets this season. This was a mutual decision on the part of the Rockets and John Wall, who have agreed to allow Wall, who has 2 years and $90-plus million left on his contract, to sit at home, work out on his own while the Wizards, I keep saying the Wizards because John Wall has been synonymous with the Wizards for so long, but while the Rockets look for a trade. To this point, I've been told there has been zero traction on a trade for John Wall, so he's just hanging out, doing nothing, Howard, while the Rockets are one of the worst teams in the NBA. What's your take on the John Wall situation, which doesn't get a lot of attention because the Rockets are bad. John Wall's not the biggest of names anymore. There's not a disagreement between the two sides, but this still is a little bit bizarre in my mind.
Yeah, I think that the thing here, Chris, is that the team and the player have agreed on this, right? There's no conflict. There's no concern. There's no controversy at the most basic level. John Wall is fine with just, chilling and relaxing, letting his body heal, working out on his own, get ready for whatever his next team is, whenever that might be.
Can I just stop you for 1 second there, yeah. Howard? Just 1 second. I mean, the body heal stuff, okay. Like, Wall, though, has played 113 games since the end of the 17-18 season. Like,
I'm just saying he's never been healthy. Healed. Yeah, well,
okay.
All right.
But I think, when did they get eliminated last year? April? Like, they've been done since April of last year. I think his body is perfectly fine.
I didn't mean that in a literal sense, Chris. I just mean, like, look, he's deep in his career. He's got a lot of miles on him. I mean, it's more a matter of, like...
Except he doesn't have a lot of miles on him. That's the whole point. He doesn't have a lot of miles on him.
He went through some pretty catastrophic injuries his last couple of years in Washington.
Correct. Looked good last year, though, at times. Like, played pretty well.
Sure. All right, let's frame it this way, then. If he has no urgency to be back on a court and is fine with extending out his career by not taking on extra miles now for a team that's going nowhere and maybe risking some other injury for a guy who's had a couple of really bad ones, I have no issue with, like, there really isn't any issue for us to have with it. And if the Rockets don't, if the Rockets don't want him playing because they prefer to just play other young guys and lose a ton of games and get yet another high pick in their multi-year tank that we thought had possibly been eliminated from the league, then the Rockets, I guess, are entitled to pursue it this way. Where this becomes a problem is not team to player level. It's more at the institutional level for the league because the NBA did take drastic steps to reweight the lottery to discourage tanking. And then the NBA created the play-in tournament to incentivize bad teams to keep trying late in the season. And the results of those things were that we saw, whatever it was, 22, 23 out of 30 teams still playing hard down the stretch last season. I wrote about it. I proclaimed the tanking era over. That was not entirely serious, but that there was, but it was a dramatic shift. It was a moment, and it looked like, hey, look, this, the NBA has kind of not quite fixed this. There will always be a team or two that have no incentive, but you didn't have widespread multi-team tanking. The Rockets are what the Rockets are doing right now, Chris. While we can say it was necessitated by James Harden and Russell Westbrook asking out and then making those deals, this is as analogous to the Sixers multi-year tank as anything we've seen since the Sixers multi-year tank, since the process. And it also involves this added element of telling John Wall, don't play. Now, would John Wall measurably change the Rockets? That's a reasonable question. I don't know if at this stage of his career, if he's going to add that many more wins anyway, but a seasoned former all-star point guard versus a couple of young guys who neither of which may really truly be a point guard in Porter and Green, yeah, it might make a difference. And so if this is just a tanking measure by the Rockets to keep John Wall away, then the institutional problem, the systematic problem is more about that the Rockets have just decided, we don't care. And that runs obviously contrary to everything that the league has been trying to accomplish the last few years.
I agree. The Rockets would be better with John Wall. Would they have 4 wins? I don't know. 5 wins? I don't know. They don't really have.
They'd have
a
more
true
than one
point guard. Yeah, I mean, they don't really have a true point guard on the roster, and the guys playing are all young, inexperienced. Could John Wall, who I think is what 31 years old, help that team? He absolutely could. So, in John Wall not playing, the Rockets are going to lose more games, which is in effect tanking. It's tanking. You got a guy under contract who's virtually untradeable at this point. There's no reason he shouldn't be in the lineup. My concern as well is, where's the NBA on this? Like, where is Adam Silver? Where is the league office? The guy's got a contract, and the two sides just decide he's not going to play? Like, that's okay? We're good with that? Like, I don't understand it. Like, putting aside wins and losses, which is the most significant issue with all this, like, how about things like ticket sales or television ratings? Not that John Wall is this massive attraction, but he's a pretty big name. And if you have a John Wall in the lineup, maybe you sell a few more tickets, which is important to the league. Maybe the television ratings tick up a little bit, which is important to the league. Like, there's just a number of different reasons why it's insane that this is being allowed to happen at the league level. And I consistently go back to the fact, and this is a fact, that Adam Silver is just too player friendly at times, like doesn't want to ruffle feathers when it comes to issues with players. That's why he's often, demurring at times on issues involving players, to not punishing or not getting too involved in those types of situations. Like, where are we with this? Why are we allowing this to happen? John Wall is a healthy 31-year-old former All-Star who could help this team win, who could sell a few tickets, who could drive a few ratings. Again, not calling John Wall LeBron James here or one of the top guys in the league, but he's a legitimate player, a legitimate former star player who played pretty well in his first season in Houston. Why are we allowing this guy to just sit out, to wait for a trade? That's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen. I was texting with a bunch of different executives this morning talking about Wall. Like, what do you think the interest is? Like, nope, not interested. I mean, the guy is an injury issue, and we'd be interested after there's a buyout, but not under his current contract. So he is probably going to sit out the entire season, which would make that 113-game total since 17-18 stay static until we get to the 22-23 NBA season. That is insane to me. And just to make one other point on this, like, what is John Wall thinking right now? Like, do you just not want to play? I understand it's a tough situation to be in a rebuilding team, that you don't want to be there, but doesn't it strike you, Howard, as more likely that there is a Wall trade if he goes out and averages like 20-10 for that team? Yes. Which he might do. Like, that's a team that's a mess that needs scorers, need playmakers. He might put up big numbers with that team this year. So I don't get it. I don't get why Wall wants to sit out either.
No, and look, it's a little bit akin to the Simmons situation. Obviously not as toxic of a situation, because there's no conflict between Wall and the Rockets. They've all agreed on this, but it's analogous in the sense that this approach is not doing anybody any good. In both cases, if the player were playing, there'd be a much more vibrant potential market for them. I mean, there might not be any situation, Chris, short of John Wall going out and averaging, 28 and 12 every night on, 50% shooting or something, that's going to get somebody to want to trade for his contract. So
yeah, but he might, Howard, like, what if he does that and you get to midseason and the Blazers are like, screw it, I'm not trading anybody, and the Simmons situation keeps devolving. Maybe you get the Wizards or get the Sixers. Why do I keep saying the Wizards? We're going to get to the Wizards at some point later in the show. Maybe you get the Sixers like to be like, you know what, screw it, we got to just cut ties. Let's trade Ben Simmons for John Wall. Like, And if you're Houston, you probably do that because you get a defensive-minded veteran point guard who can be part of your young core.
If I were some doofus on Twitter, I'd say the Wizards are living rent-free in your head, Chris. That's the problem.
They really are. They really are. Shout out to Tommy Shepard, Executive of the Year, right there. Early front runner for Executive.
Shout out to dumb Twitter trolls who make everything about who's living rent-free in your head because they have nothing clever to say. Wall is not doing himself any good because, yeah, any chance that he would have of impressing a potential rival team to trade for him, you've given them no incentive. You've given nobody any data to work with, any reason to think that you might be worth trading for that contract, especially by midseason, where now you're only on the hook for what, a year and a half, the last year and a half of that contract. And it's not doing the Rockets any good because, hey, where is this all going? Like, okay, Rockets, you burn a year of John Wall's career by not having him play. Okay, you get another high lottery pick, fine. That's going to happen regardless, probably, but you increase your odds. Okay. There are no guarantees with the new lottery system. So, but whatever, they're playing the odds. So you get to the end of the season, John Wall still has whatever, 44, 45 million left on the deal over the final year. It's still going to be a really tough play in terms of a trade. And he's no more, he's done nothing to make any team think that he might be worth it, even as a one-year bid. So then what? Are you buying him out? Are you waiving and stretching the contract? Like, what? Again, what's the end game? How is this benefiting them in any way other than potentially with lottery balls, which, as we've seen, since they reweighted the lottery system, being one of the three worst teams is no guarantee whatsoever of getting the top pick, much less even a top three pick. So there's nothing productive being gained here by either party, I would say. And yeah, back to Adam Silver. I mean, you want to add this to the list of questions that eventually when Adam Silver speaks again, probably at the All-Star break. I mean, he does a few press conferences per year, but add this to the list of questions. This and Ben Simmons and Enes Kanter on China and the Robert Sarver situation, who knows, maybe that's resolved by then, and the Neil Olshey situation. We got a heck of a backlog. We talk about wanting to see Ben Simmons sitting up at the microphone. We got a heck of a backlog to throw at Adam Silver eventually.
Yeah. It's a lot of questions that are out there right now, but this is an interesting one because I don't think this ends any way but in a buyout for John Wall, and I don't think that buyout comes until before the start of next season. So you're going to go a full season with this guy sitting on the bench. That is wrong for several different reasons. All right, let's talk about stuff happening on the court. And now, Howard, we can talk about my Washington Wizards, who are off to a terrific start this year. There's a lot of individual reasons why they're doing it. The trade that sent Russell Westbrook to L.A. and brought Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, KCP back, that has worked. I mean, Montrezl Harrell looks a lot like the sixth man of the year we saw 2 years ago with the Clippers than the one we saw last year with the Lakers. KCP has been a defensive presence. Kyle Kuzma was averaging close to 10 rebounds per game, which is wild. And he's been a big part of the best defensive rebounding team in the league and a team that right now, as we record this, is inside the top five in defensive efficiency. So also a team that was 20th last year in defensive efficiency. So they turned that around completely. Critics of the Wizards will say they haven't played the toughest of schedules up until this point. But Howard, this team getting off to this start, it's pretty damn impressive. What's your takeaway from watching the Wizards this season?
far exceeding expectations is an understatement, or at least is the statement. I thought they'd be a lot better. I would say that if you'd asked me before the season, where are the Wizards finishing? Are they finally making the play? I would have said, you know what? They're somewhere in the 7 to 10 range. They're in the play-in range. And they might be, you know, maybe they're challenging for 5th or 6th if everything breaks their way. But that was to me the ceiling. I thought middle of the playoff field range was their ceiling. And so I expected a leap. I expected them to be better. I legitimately thought that the deal that they made, that five-team trade that also brought in Dinwiddie, let's not forget. Like, they expanded this thing to make it far beyond just Russell Westbrook for the Lakers' entire supporting cast. They made this a five-team trade that also pulled in the Nets and got them Spencer Dinwiddie. So, yeah, hell of a lot of credit to the Wizards, to Tommy Shepard, and the rest of that front office staff for engineering this thing that completely remade their team in a really effective way with a bunch of high-level role players. Like, do you have the requisite multiple stars that it takes to be a contender for the most part in this league? No, that's not what they did. And I always thought that was going to be have to be the case to keep Beal happy. But what they've done instead is really the next best thing. If you can't get a true second star to play next to Bradley Beal, if Wall was no longer the answer and he wasn't, if Westbrook wasn't the answer and he definitely wasn't, if you can replenish your entire rotation with high-level role players that are legit starters for nearly every team in the league, right? KCP could be starting for every team in the league. Montrezl Harrell, who's coming off the bench, could be starting for a lot of teams and has in the recent past. Kyle Kuzma's a starter for most teams in the league. Like, they got a bunch of guys who, whether they're a fourth or fifth starter, whether they're first or second guy off the bench, they are all absolute high-level rotation guys. And the Wizards did not have that prior to that deal. They had a lot of young guys who were still just trying to find their way. And here they are with a really solid cast that fits perfectly around Beal. And maybe they're overachieving a little bit. I mean, I don't think we expect the Wizards are going to finish with the top seed in the East. I still don't think they're top four in the East when all's said and done. I think the Wizards and Bulls, well, looking at the standings right now, Wizards, Bulls, and Cavs are all in the top four. I don't think they're going to be there, but that's not a knock on any of them, Chris. They've all had transformations that are impressive and sustainable, just not quite to that level because we've had some other teams in the East that should be better that are underachieving at the moment.
Yeah, and I mentioned Tommy Shepard earlier, but you got to give him a massive amount of credit for taking a team that had John Wall and Bradley Beal 2 years ago, two very good players, but a dynamic that didn't really work, a roster that didn't really work. And 2 years later, with the Westbrook trade mixed in between, he has built a much more successful-looking formula. He has created a more successful-looking formula for all the reasons that you mentioned. I mean, those defensive numbers, they're going to beat a lot of teams if they play that type of defense. If they're leading the NBA in defensive rebounding, they're going to beat a lot of teams. If they're top five in the NBA in defensive efficiency, they're going to beat a lot of teams. And they're doing it with, you know, again, it's not, they're not top heavy anymore. For how many years, Howard, were they top heavy? It was Wall and Beal and then a bunch of other guys.
All of the years.
It's like Otto Porter had a couple of good years. Like they were just very top heavy for most of the Beal era. Now, Beal is still the head of the snake, but there's like five guys that can beat you. KCP makes outside shots. Daniel Gafford, who was a huge get for the Wizards last year, he's the starting center now with this team. And he has been that kind of athletic, springy guy that you need next to a team with a bunch of floor spacers. So, I mean, this has been a remarkable, unexpected turnaround. Because I think a year and a half ago, would you have believed that we'd be sitting here talking about how it's more likely than not that Bradley Beal winds up staying there long term? Like, unless Bradley Beal really wants out of D.C., which I've never gotten that impression. He's going to look around and say, look, I see a direction here. Like, we're not a championship-level team yet, but we have the pieces and presumably the cap flexibility over the next couple of years to potentially get there. And I think that's, I mean, that's just a huge win, if nothing else, for the Wizards this season.
You know, credit to all parties there because they have handled it with a lot of class the whole time, and most especially Bradley Beal has. Bradley Beal could have pouted and whined and stamped his feet and demanded out 100 times by now. And it would have been justified, by the way. Like, I would have had no problem with him doing that because he's given them, you know, whatever, 8 years into his career now, whatever it is. Like, he's given them a nice long runway to get things right, and it hasn't happened, and some of that's injury. But, like, he's at that stage where stars in this league, if you haven't won yet, and if you want to challenge for championships, that's a stage where it's justified to say, you know what, it's time. Either trade me or I'm going to walk away at the end of my contract. And that could still happen. But he has been consistent in not only not playing any of those cards, but, you know, I'm sure there's some pressure put on behind the scenes, you know, but it's been done in a way that has never become a spectacle and has not hurt the franchise or him. I think they're now at a really good spot because if he sees enough progress where he thinks, you know what, we can win this way. The Bucks weren't a super team, right? Like, Chris Middleton's an all-star and Drew Holiday has been an all-star, but, like, that's no super team around Giannis. And granted, Bradley Beal is not Giannis, but occasionally a team breaks through even in this age of the NBA where it's not a stacked super team lineup. So maybe Beal now sees a path. And maybe with the added flexibility they have by not having anybody else on max deals, they're just more easily, you know, they can more easily reshuffle that roster to bring in somebody. I don't know how you're getting. I still think you probably need a second star, and I don't know that there's anybody on that roster who's ever going to be that second star. So there's still some fundamental question about, is this a team that can eventually challenge for a title? But where they are right now is a really healthy spot, and it has given them at least time to breathe and evaluate. And Beal could still walk away, right? Like, he's a walk away free agent this summer, right?
Yeah, he can opt out of his contract, but I don't, you're not seeing a lot of reasons for him to want to do that. A guy we didn't really mention was the offseason signing of Spencer Dinwiddie, who has been excellent for this team, averaging 16 points, around 6 assists per game. He's shooting about 36% from three-point range, 43%, was a little bit low overall, but he's been a good fit next to Beal, and he's won them some games with his play in the fourth quarter of these games. So, you know, with Dinwiddie alongside Beal, that is a high-level backcourt. And with some of the flexibility they have over the next couple of years, with some of the contracts coming off the books, whether it's Harrell after this season, Kuzma's got one more guaranteed year left on his deal, got a player option 2 years later. As I'm looking up and down here, I mean Bertans' contract kind of sucks. It does suck. That was one of those deals that wasn't really sure about what had happened. Bertans can be a good shooter, but sometimes he just he's throwing up like 9-10 threes per game at times. He's just pulling the trigger from deep. That was a weird deal, I thought.
Let me just throw in one quick out. Quick aside, though, by the way, because we talk about, like, you know, deals teams made and, you know, there's been a lot of these. Should the Lakers have, you know, traded for Westbrook? No, they shouldn't have. Should they have given up all those parts that, you know, they really, really could use a Kuzma and a KCP, and they could use Alex Caruso. And there's been plenty of discussion of that around the NBA the last few days, too. There's a lot to second guess there. But I'll go back to something I said months ago when I had Spencer Dinwiddie on the Crossover podcast and in the wake of that interview. I don't care what it would have taken for the Nets to keep him. And as I always say, I know it's not my billions. I'm not the one having to write the checks. But the Nets could have and should have kept Spencer Dinwiddie. Not because you could see the future and know that Kyrie Irving was going to go AWOL, refuse the vax and everything. But guess what? If anybody was ever going to refuse the vaccination and make it problematic for him to be playing for you, it was going to be Kyrie Irving. So no, you couldn't have seen it coming, but maybe you could have slightly anticipated it. And besides that, after a season in which Harden missed half the year with injury and Durant missed half the year with injury and Kyrie had some injuries and, you know, three guys who are deep enough into their careers that there's always going to be some uncertainty, what a nice luxury it would have been to have Spencer Dinwiddie as either backcourt mate to Kyrie or sixth man or now in this scenario as the guy who would be playing alongside James Harden and Kevin Durant on a nightly basis, and how much better off would the Nets be if they had just done that? And again, I know it was going to, I don't even know what the final tab would have been. Tens of millions to keep him, over and above his contract because of the luxury tax. You want to win a championship? You brought in Kevin Durant and James Harden for that express purpose? Once you're in, you're all in. And I'd say the same goes for the Lakers. If you're in, you're all in. Should have spent the money and kept Alex Caruso.
Yeah, Caruso for sure. And Dinwiddie, even if the Kyrie situation unfolded differently, is still or would have been a tradable asset. Like, Dinwiddie's a good player. He's a young player. Teams would have lined up to get him even at a big contract. Let's finish, Howard, with Cleveland, where a lot of excitement right now around Evan Mobley with the way he's playing. Mobley and Jared Allen have been a really good front court in Cleveland, especially defensively. Darius Garland has been really good. A little bit of a rain on the parade with the injury to Colin Sexton that's probably going to wind up costing them games over the next few weeks. But for the first time in as long as I can remember, Howard, since LeBron James was not a member of the Cavaliers, there's real optimism in Cleveland that this team might have the makings of a future contender. I'll put the question this way. Should they be optimistic? Is this the foundation of a future playoff team in Cleveland?
Yes, it's the foundation of a future playoff team. It might even be the foundation of a current playoff team. I don't know. Again, if you look at where they are in the standings, let's do the quick review. They're fourth in the East. They're not really the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference, but a couple teams ahead of them probably shouldn't be there either. And again, Chicago and Washington, I think, are going to have to fall back to the pack a little bit. The Nets are finally where you'd expect them to be, top two in the East as we record this. The Heat are lingering back there, and you know they've had a couple of bumps and bruises, but the Heat got off to a really strong start. I still think the Heat are a top four team in the East alongside Brooklyn and eventually Milwaukee, who are 6-8 right now. But again, does anybody really believe this is where the Bucks are going to finish? No. So things are going to sort out. It's, you know, we haven't even hit the 20-game mark yet. And, you know, some of this is going to, you know, there's going to be a regression to the mean, or there's going to be some teams finally finding their footing who have more talent. That's all going to happen. And that's fine. The Cavs don't have to be the fourth best team in the East to declare this season a success after the rough couple of years they've had since LeBron's departure. If the question is more about the outline of what they have, then yeah, I think there's reason for great optimism. I mean, we knew Garland and Sexton had some talent, but they weren't a great fit together, and I think still won't be a great fit together, and eventually won't be together. But you pick one, probably Garland, since you didn't extend Sexton, and you're moving forward with him and Mobley as your foundational pieces. Are those two guys both perennial all-stars in the future? I mean, Mobley certainly looks like it. I don't know about Garland. Maybe. Mobley looks like he could be a game changer. And I think the only question you could have, and like this is a really obnoxious, unfair question, 14 games into a guy's rookie season, is he like just this amazing kind of, you know, Swiss Army knife of a big man who could do a lot of different things at both ends of the court and then thus raises your floor a lot at both ends? Or is he a guy who gives you a higher ceiling by being able to be your go-to guy, right? And I don't know about that yet, right? Is it like Evan Mobley is like an amazing player and a really unique player at his size, and combined with some of the guys he's with, it all fits. But is he going to be the guy who becomes your franchise star who carries you to, you know, top four finish every, like, I don't know. And it's too soon to be even be asking that question. So when you're asking Chris the question about like, where does this lead? Are they now set? You know, is this it? They're on the path. They got their guy. Everybody needs a guy. That's the thing in the NBA. It sounds reductive, but it's true. Once you've got a top five player, especially, or at least a top 10 guy, you're a different team. You are now, you can just plug that team in every season for the playoffs, somewhere in the top eight or top six. I don't think the Cavs are that team yet. I'm not sure if Mobley's that guy yet, but maybe.
Yeah. Look, Evan Mobley and the play of this rookie class, like, makes me really excited about how competitive it's going to be over the next 5 or 6 years. It's not like the 03 class because there's no LeBron James, I don't think, in it, but you can see high level talent amongst those top five picks. You've got Jalen Green in Houston, who I think is going to be an elite scorer in this league. Mobley, has the makings of an Anthony Davis type player, both defensively and offensively. I mean, he is showing signs of whenever it is he puts that man strength on, of being just a force on both ends of the floor. Scottie Barnes might be Rookie of the Year. I mean, you watch Scottie Barnes play, he looks like Scottie Pippen out there at times. He has that two-way game to him, and he looks physically mature, unlike so many other rookies. And then Jalen Suggs in Orlando, a lot of people high on coming into the draft. Cade Cunningham just getting started in Detroit as the number one pick, and he's shown some flashes as well. So I love this rookie class. That's why I think of Mobley right at the top. You mentioned Sexton. That, to me, is the one way that Cleveland could screw this up. Colin Sexton's a good player, but if I'm Cleveland, I'm going into next offseason with a number in my mind that I absolutely will not exceed. A number that is both affordable and tradable if you want to move Colin Sexton down the line. I think Garland has kind of proven that he's the guy at the point guard slot, averaging 7 assists per game this year. Sexton can put up numbers, but I'm not buying Garland Sexton as a successful playoff backcourt. I don't think he can do that. I think while if Sexton walked at the end of the year, you'd take a short-term hit, but I'd rather build around Garland, Mobley, whatever draft pick you get next year, Jared Allen, who is another tradable asset if it becomes time for Mobley just to play the five full-time. That, to me, is kind of the only way that they could screw this up. If they go out next summer and max out Colin Sexton, or give him just a deal that makes him virtually untradeable. Because I think that puts more of a ceiling on what this team can be. Without him, again, you'd miss him. He's a real scorer. He's a very good player. No question about it. But I think you have to look at this long term and say, is Garland Sexton, are they our pair? Are they our duo in that backcourt? And if they're not, you're just kind of trying to squeeze out wins on a team that has a lower ceiling than maybe one that didn't have Colin Sexton.
They're both 6'1". You're not winning in this league with an all 6'1" backcourt unless they are, you know, Chris Paul and Isaiah Thomas or something.
I'd move Sexton.
Yes.
If there's a reasonable deal that even if it only gets you, 50 cents on the dollar, 60 cents on the dollar, I think you do it. It kind of goes back to the Westbrook trade we just talked about. If you can get pieces that work around Mobley and Garland and Allen, you're onto something there. So I would, if I'm Kobe Altman, I look pretty hard at some of the offers you get for Colin Sexton this season.
It's like Gilbert Arenas said once, infamously, pick one.
Yep.
No.
Gotta do it.
No. Probably a bad reference. No, you do. You have to pick one. And it's probably Garland. This is not you tooled around with this for a couple of years. It's pretty clear to the whole league that Sexton and Garland together as a starting backcourt is not a sustainable winner or a winner, period. And I think this moment's always been coming. I think it's tough right now, unfortunately, that Sexton ends up with a knee injury, and now, whatever in-season move you might have wanted to make with him as a trade piece gets, it's a little more complicated, but could still be done. And yeah, I think that's the move. At a certain point, after you've been bad for a few years and you've got a bunch of young guys, and you might have hit on one and not on another, but eventually you're trying, it's a sorting out process, right? You're probably not hitting on all of them and they may not all fit together. Well, in this case, you now do have two really good players to move forward with in Garland and Mobley for sure. Jury out on a couple other guys. And with Sexton, I think it's you know enough to know now that it's time to move on.
Yeah, keep your financial flexibility in case there's somebody out there you want to sign as a free agent. You got to pay Garland, of course, at some point, but Allen's contract is not terrible. Mobley's on a rookie deal for the next few seasons. Yeah, this is the time for Cleveland to be really smart about some of the moves they make, because it'll position them one way or the other for the next few years. Howard, great stuff, man. Enjoy warrior country, and we'll do it again next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.